Welcome back into Morning Drive, hour number two, off and running live here on a Wednesday. Nick Braden, D-Mace Marquise, good to have you in as we take you up until 10 o'clock today. Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason coming up at 7:30 this morning. Let's get back to the Titans as we've now turned the page. It's a Wednesday. We're getting ready for the Falcons in Atlanta on Sunday at 12 o'clock kickoff. Where exactly can the Titans take advantage of the Atlanta Falcons? I think that's the question as you try to kind of erase these last 2 weeks, get back to the win column and get to 500, and obviously get the return of Taylor Lewan.
So I had a bunch of stats I wanted to throw. I wanted to get y'all's opinion on this. Very few people's opinions I value more than yours, guys. So I wanted to hear what you had to say about a couple of these numbers. So I'm going to throw some stats out at you guys. These are numbers concerning the Titans-Falcons matchup, and I want to know, how important is it to you? What does it mean? Can it play itself out this weekend? Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Sound good? All right. Number one on this list for me is the penalties. So the Titans benefited, obviously, from the Cleveland Browns' mistakes, right? They made major, major mistakes. The Atlanta Falcons are the most penalized team in the NFL. Number one in the league. 35 penalties so far on the season. That is, what, 12 a game?
12 a game, yeah.
Basically, just under that. What is it about, like, how can you take advantage? Does that number matter to you guys? Is that a stat that you guys care about if you're a Titans fan?
Yeah, I mean, you beat the Cleveland Browns by 30 points in large part because Cleveland had, what, 18 penalties that day?
Yeah.
For 182 yards or whatever the heck it was?
Titans are ninth in the NFL in penalties. They were a little more penalized against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Ninth fewest or ninth most?
Ninth best,
okay.
meaning ninth fewest.
All right, so relatively a well-disciplined, well-coached team.
Now, they were number one in the NFL last year, so they were the least penalized team in the NFL last year, I believe. And a lot of those penalties all came against Jacksonville. So, to me, is there a clear discipline advantage for the Titans? Also, I'm going to tie – let me tie this in so that you guys can kind of go on this. Also, the turnover margin. The Atlanta Falcons have 7 turnovers, 28th in the NFL. They're turning the ball over twice a game, twice plus a game.
Mm-hmm.
Titans, number one in the NFL with 1 turnover. So from a discipline standpoint, does this tell you something about the matchup, that they're the most penalized team? The Titans are one of the better teams as far as discipline goes. They have some of the most turnovers in the NFL. The Titans have the least turnovers in the NFL. You put those two things together.
100%.
What does it tell you about discipline?
I mean, it tells you, first of all, I think you can do exactly what you did against Cleveland. But secondly, I mean, how many times have you watched the Red Zone channel or just highlights and you've seen self-inflicted wounds by the Falcons? They go up and down the field, up and down the field. Matt Ryan turns it over. There's a fumble from Devontae Freeman. They are a very talented team, but to, I think, the larger point that a lot of people realize, Dan Quinn is not a good coach. I'm surprised that this guy got them to the Super Bowl and had a 28-3 lead.
Yeah, that's just the tale of two teams. You have a team with immense talent in the Atlanta Falcons, but they turn the ball over, and the guy that's in charge of not turning the football over, he's the one that's committing a lot of the infractions. Then you have a team that's not as disciplined. And then you have a head coach that hadn't been able to kind of, you know, get this team to play consistently the way they need to be playing based on the talent, especially they have on the offensive side of the ball. Now, their defense has always been sort of that Achilles heel for the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, they have some defensive players on their side of the ball. Some of them have gotten hurt, you know, prior to this game this weekend. But if I'm just looking at it, based upon what you said, Braden, then I'm picking the Titans. Yes, they have more talent, Atlanta, at least on offense, but they're not disciplined. Talent without discipline equals loss. That's what it equals loss.
And
that's
what
it equals.
Because in the NFL, your margins on talent are so small.
Exactly.
But your margins on discipline can be huge.
Absolutely.
Quarterback, and that includes Marcus. That includes Matt Ryan. Guys making mistakes. That includes Dory Jackson making mistakes. Here's another one that I thought stood out in a big way. Two things. And I think this is another area the Titans can have a major advantage, potentially. Listen to these numbers on average drive start and end, right? Like, where do you get the football? So follow along with me here.
Mm-hmm.
The Falcons are allowing the opposing team to start with the football on average on the 32-yard line. Think about that.
It's pretty good for us.
For good for the Titans.
Yes.
That's 30th in the NFL. So one of the worst teams at opposing field position start, right? They start the ball on the 24-yard line, the Falcons do. One of the worst in the NFL, 27th in the league. The Titans are top five in both categories. The average defensive starting position for the Titans, 24-yard line. The average offensive starting position for the Titans, the 32-yard line. Top five in the NFL in both categories, meaning the Titans' defense is always starting with a long field, mm-hmm. and the Titans' offense is starting with one of the shorter fields. Meanwhile, the Falcons are the complete opposite. They're mm-hmm. terrible at both things. And you combine that with third down conversions. Third down conversion. On defense, the Falcons, 39th in the NFL on third down defense. 52.5% of the time, the opposing team is converting on third downs. So not only are the Falcons playing with longer fields, they're also garbage on third down.
I know you said 39 for the NFL. There's some other teams.
Wait, did I say 39?
Yes.
29.
That is how bad they are. Yes. They are 39th out of 32.
That is how bad they are.
They are 47th. this is my college.
Exactly.
This is the college.
The college is
They're
coming
113th
out.
In yards per play. The Falcons are 113th in the NFL in yards per play. No.
Actually, now that you bring that up, do you have yards per play?
I do. You want that? Of course I do.
Let's get to the bread and butter.
I'm only doing positive stuff for the Titans right now. We'll get to the negative for the Titans later, next segment. Yards per play, not good for the Titans on offense. Very good for the Falcons. But again, I thought this was remarkable. The Titans are third in the NFL or top five in the NFL on third down defense, 28% of the time, which means they're getting off the field 72% of the time on defense, whereas the Falcons are getting off the field on defense 48% of the time, which means more times than not, they are allowing the other team to convert on third down. So from a field position standpoint mm-hmm. and a third down standpoint, the Titans statistically, again, just three games, mm-hmm. but the Titans statistically have a significant edge in field position and third downs, which means, and I don't know why that wouldn't change in this game, considering they have Brett Kern as a punter mm-hmm. and their defense ain't going anywhere. So if those two stats hold up as well, that's another area you can point to the Titans and say they have a significant advantage over the Falcons.
Well, this is a game where a line has to be drawn in the sand for both teams because both teams, it's hard to make the playoffs when you go down 1-3. And here's the problem, and I don't know Atlanta's problem in regards to their division. You know, what games? Well, they lost to Indy. That's not a divisional game. They lost to the Lions, I believe. Did they lose to the Lions?
Talking about Atlanta?
Yeah.
I think they played Minnesota week one.
Yeah, Minnesota. So
Minnesota
that's
beat
not
them.
A divisional game.
Right. Yeah, Dalvin Cook ran the ball down the
Minnesota,
throat.
Indy are not divisional games. So you look at them and you say, well, if they're 1-2 now, they're not sitting in such a bad seat because two of their losses are not within a division. Well, on the flip side, the Tennessee Titans, if you look at each year they didn't make the years they didn't make the playoffs and the year they did, well, the year they did make the playoffs, they started off not good, but you know what? Those losses were not within the division. Those were wins they had within the division. The years they didn't make the playoffs, those losses early on were within the division. And once you lose within a division twice, it's hard to make those games up. And the Titans have lost twice within a division. So they can't, and I mean they can't, after four games, go down 1-3. Because you know why? Two of those losses were within the division.
615-737-1025, the number if you want to jump in on our conversation. We'll come back, continue getting ready for this Falcons and Titans game. And then bottom of the hour, Derek Mason will join us. It's Morning Drive on ESPN, 102.5 a game. It is Morning Drive. We ain't going anywhere.
At least not till 10.
Not till 10 o'clock, and then we're getting the hell out of here and going home and do our thing. That's how it works around here.
And what is that thing that you do?
Me? I don't know, do some dishes. Some laundry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because some of us, you know, we have to actually do that ourselves.
I know. I do it myself. I do my dishes and I do my laundry. I wash clothes just about every day.
But you are a hyper washer.
Yeah.
You wash all the time.
That's Derek Mason here for Febreze.
If it's one sock in a laundry thing, I'm putting it, I'm taking it out, I'm throwing it in a wash, and I'm turning the washer on.
No. Your water bill must be astronomical.
You need like an Arm & Hammer
sponsorship
or something.
No, my water bill is astronomical because the grass being watered like twice a
week. You know what we need on this show? We need a Tide sponsorship because these two knuckleheads love Alabama. You wash your clothing like it's going out of style, and I've got two daughters that are just like staining everything in my house. We need a Tide sponsorship.
Tide. Roll Tide. Listening.
Somebody say Tide.
Exactly. Wasn't even listening back there.
We're not using the other laundry detergent. We're only using Tide.
Arm & Hammer, you're dead to me.
Exactly. Right now, your
chance. Bounty. that's paper towels. Never mind.
Right now, your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to Blue Raiders football as MTSU takes on Marshall, Floyd Stadium, Saturday, October the 5th. Just be caller 5 right now, 615-737-1025. Caller 5, 615-737-1025. YPP.
So the yards per play, and this is fascinating to me, the yards per play.
Not OPP, not YPP.
You know me. Not surprising here. Not surprising here that the Titans are 27th in the NFL in yards per play, 4.9 yards per play. That's not good. Mm-hmm. Falcons, 6.1 yards per play. That's 9th in the NFL. So every time they're snapping the ball, the Falcons are picking up more than a full yard per play, better than the Titans, which doesn't sound like a lot. But again, one's 9th and one's 27th in the league. One's one of the best. One's one of the worst. What's really fascinating about that stat is that the yards per pass attempt, the Titans are better than the Falcons, and the yards per rush attempt, the Titans are better than the Falcons. So how could it be possible that you're better every time you throw the ball and you're better every time you run the ball than the Falcons on a per-play average, but yards per play, the Falcons are significantly better? You want to know why? Because Matt Ryan's not getting sacked. So here's the number. The Titans, 32nd in the NFL, 15.5% of the time that Marcus Mariota drops back to pass, he is getting sacked. That is worse than the NFL. That is 1-6. If Arthur Smith calls 6 pass plays, Marcus Mariota is getting sacked on one of them. Matt Ryan, in the meantime, is being sacked on less than 4% of his dropbacks. You guys can do the math on that. It would take him, if he dropped back 40 times to throw, he's going to get sacked
once.
One time.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So the numbers are insanely different in the sack protection of the quarterback. Again, not a surprise, but you can see what it's doing to your yards per play. Like, every time you throw the ball, you're better than the Falcons. Every time you run the ball, you're better than the Falcons on average. But the yards per play is so different. The Falcons are so much more productive because they're not giving up the big negative chunk play and the way the Titans are.
You know what it really does, too? It really emphasizes just how imperative it is for Marcus Mariota, Arthur Smith, and this entire offense to, quote, stay ahead of schedule, stay ahead of the sticks, because when they fall behind and they don't pick up positive yards on first down and they've got second and long and third and long, the confidence level of a fan base right now watching this team on 3rd and 9 mm-hmm. is minuscule.
Yeah, they haven't been able to pick up third and longs. And it's hard for any team to pick up a third and long, but, you know, the Titans are one of the worst teams. Hell, they're one of the worst. They are the worst teams. They are the worst team in third down percentage based upon their offense and them staying on the field, because a lot of their third downs are 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. And that shouldn't be the case. With Derrick Henry at running back, with you bringing in Adam Humphries, he can be an extension of your run game on first down. Throw him a quick pass and let him gain 3-4 yards. And now it's 2nd and 6 as opposed to 2nd and 10 or 2nd and 15 because of a penalty, or 2nd and 20 because of a penalty. You open your playbook up when you can get positive 2-3 yards on first down. When you don't do that, now you put yourself behind the sticks, and it's very difficult. But even with that, you know, watching this Jacksonville game, there's 3 problems here. And when I do my breakdowns, I go over some of them. But there's 3 problems here, a few problems here. 1, Marcus holds on to the ball too long. 2, the receivers don't separate too good. And then 3, they don't do – and I said this to Floyd yesterday. They don't do a good job at combo blocking, meaning I'm not talking about the offensive linemen comboing with one another. I'm talking when they have a tight end helping out or running back helping out. They do not do a good job at that. They need to become better at figuring out, if I'm going to help, I can't be a liability in me helping. You're there to help, not there to be a hindrance.
Because otherwise you're slowing down your value in the passing game.
Absolutely. And that's what the extra blocker has been on occasions to the Titans' offensive line. They have been a hindrance. They have been they have been their Achilles heel almost when they help. It's like, I want you to help, but you're not helping in the right way.
And then you got three guys in the route.
Exactly. So now I only got, well, really two guys in the route sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I'm leaving the tight end to block, and he's not helping the way he's supposed to. I'm leaving the running back in, and the running back is on the wrong side, and then now he's tripping up the guard and or the tackle. And now Marcus gets rushed.
And to your point, not even the offensive line. Like, I agree with you that the tight ends, I think Adam Humphreys has been asked to chip some, and that seems like a bizarre strategy, but that's even been asked to do by this offense. And so, yes, the helpers aren't doing a good job, but guess who's also not doing a good job of chipping? The offensive line. Like, when Douglas is supposed to chip the Calais Campbell and then get to and make sure he blocks the linebacker, Calais Campbell sacks the quarterback. Like, when the offensive line can't do it, you know, and your helpers aren't helping. Like, it's just it's a recipe for disaster. So, again, this is on Arthur Smith to fix. This is on the quarterback to fix. Oh, by the way, it's on the offensive line to fix as well. We knew this going into this game, that this is a problem. One more game without Lawan. I will say that the coaching staff is far more optimistic about Nate Davis potentially being an option here. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, just put anybody in there. Let's put Darren McFarlane in there to see if he can block, because it's going to be better than Jameel Douglas at this
point.
Here's
my thing with this whole Nate Davis project, or waiting on Nate Davis to come in.
We have to get him ready, Derek.
Was Nate Davis hurt at the beginning of the year? I don't know. He was healthy, right?
Well, they're saying they're getting him back up ready for games. I'm assuming that's an injury.
Was he injured?
He missed a good portion of camp, right?
Yeah, he didn't practice at all, but why?
Exactly.
No one's really explained it.
But when he did practice, did they feel good about him? We don't know.
We don't know anything.
Let me ask you this, though.
It's got to be better than Jameel Douglas, though, because that was atrocious.
Third-round draft pick out of Charlotte, of all places.
That's right.
Right guard, what should be our expectation for a third-round interior offensive lineman?
Well, here's the thing.
Like, should we be ticked off right now that he's been MIA?
He should be a contributor.
He should be. Take you back. 10, 15, 20 years ago, third-rounders, fourth-rounders, they were expected to come in, contribute a little, but we're going to let you develop.
Depth piece.
Yeah. But as time started to pass, first-rounders, second-rounders became almost like, we want you to be an immediate starter. Yeah. That third-rounder, they want you to be a guy that plays a lot. You know, we're drafting you in the third, especially if we only got so many picks. We're drafting you in the third round.
And a huge need at right guard.
We have a need at this position, and we want you to come and play right now. So when you draft a guy in the third round, it's no longer like it used to be, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where we draft him in the third, we let him develop, and then kind of push him. No, first, second, third rounders now, they are expected to contribute right away.
Especially with the need at right guard. There is no they've said it. Vrabel said, "Hey, we're working to get him ready. We're hoping he's going to be ready this week." Again, that might be up to speed from a stamina, physicality standpoint, health standpoint. That could be up to speed with the game plan, up to speed with assignments, up to speed with the rest of the offensive line. There's a lot of things that means, but at this point, what do you have to lose? Douglas,
your quarterback.
That's a good point. Douglas last week got I don't suggest Pro Football Focus is the end all be all. I
love Pro Football Focus.
I enjoy it because I'm a stats nerd, but I don't think it defines everything. But it's a pretty good indicator. Ben Jones was in like the 70s as far as a pass block rating. Jack Conklin was in the 70s as far as pass block rating, and he was responsible for at least three of the sacks. So that gives you an idea of, you know, being in the 70s, Douglas was rated at a 12.4. Do you know how hard it is?
Was he out there?
Do you know how hard it is to
was
be
he
rated?
Out there?
And I'm not trying to be mean to the young guy, but like, to be a 12.4 in the Pro Football Focus pass block ratings is almost impossible.
You're just out there.
You literally, if I went out on the field and on every play as a wide receiver fell down on my face, you know, the ball is snapped and I fell on my face, I might get a 12. That's how hard it is to get a 12.4. So what do you have to lose?
It's like back in the day where you get 15 points for just putting your name on the SAT,
yes.
And you still only got a 15.
You get a 12 for being in the game. He got a 0.4.
It is hard to get a 12.
It's so hard. So Nate Davis, God, hope you're ready to go this weekend because you need
they
help.
They need something better
you
than 12.
Help.
A 13 would be better than a 12.
A 22.
Goodness.
You know how hard it is to get a 22? Or a 32?
That means you're not doing your job, buddy.
Nope.
Ever at any point during the game.
Yeah. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off on Sunday with the kickoff show from 7 to 9:30. And then NFL pregame live will be live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders. It's all brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealer, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. We'll get a little college football discussion, our weekly visit with Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason. It's coming up next here on Morning Drive.
You guys know I'm a big nerd. We just talked about Pro Football Focus and yards per play. I like my math, right? Well, here's an equation to really get you going that you're really going to like, and it all adds up to big saving. Let's do the math. Let's do the math right now. Now you can get Xfinity Internet and Xfinity Mobile each for $30 a month. That equals awesome Wi-Fi from America's best internet provider and the best LTE on the go. It's the ultimate coverage solution. It's all in numbers. You could save up to $800 a year on your wireless bill with Xfinity Mobile. And until October 27th, you could even get $250 back when you purchase an eligible smartphone. It's basically the perfect equation. Xfinity makes saving simple, easy, and awesome. Don't miss out on Xfinity Internet and Mobile, each for $30 a month. You'll get internet now with up to 100 megabits download speed for 12 months with a one-year agreement, and Xfinity Mobile with 3 gigs of shared wireless data. Go to Xfinity.com/save big. That's Xfinity.com/save big. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit a store today. Requires eco bill and auto pay. Internet offer ends 10/27/19. New performance internet customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra and subject to change after agreement term. Regular rate supply. Mobile savings compared to Verizon and AT&T plans. Actual speeds vary and not guaranteed. Xfinity. Simple, easy, and awesome.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, rolling along live here on a Wednesday.
Man.
We will rip Marquise Munson coming up when we have time.
Forgive me if I go astray.
All right, that is our Derek Mason.
This morning, good for it.
Let's see if
what were the words you just said.
I don't know. The sky was so
he's like, rubber,
everywhere.
All right,
where's your little Corvette when you need it?
Exactly. You can afford one, too. We're done singing with Derek Mason, number 85.
Oh,
let's see if the Vanderbilt head coach, Derek Mason, can maybe sing us a little Prince here on a Wednesday. Coach, good morning.
Hey, good morning, fellas. You know what? I love Prince, but I can't sing. So let's just get that.
This is where one Derek Mason needs to learn from the other Derek Mason. You heard him trying to sing Prince there. I'm not sure we got any words out of him.
Yeah,
he's just mumbling, Coach.
Coach, so let's look at what you got this week. I got to believe that after the first 3 games of the season and that schedule, that gauntlet of Georgia, Purdue on the road, LSU, maybe taking a little bit of a breather, a sigh of relief, and saying, okay, now we can get back to business. And you don't look down on your competition, but I got to believe there's some type of feeling like, whew, okay, you know, here we go.
I think we learned some things about ourselves. You know, obviously, man, we played some good competition, in the first quarter of the season. But, you know, this Northern Illinois team is one that has to be respected. I mean, their program has done a lot. Since 2010, and they've had 6 10-win seasons. For us, it's just about staying in the grind. We understand, man, that we've played, good competition, but it doesn't stop. I mean, once you get into the schedule, you're into the schedule. But I think, we're getting healthy. Guys are starting to be put in the right position, man. We just need to make sure, our schemes and everything that we do is about us.
I hear a lot from coaches who say the sort of old phrase of, I fear the losing more than I enjoy the winning. And we were talking to Coach Healy from Charlotte earlier today just about how you sort of create a buy-in and create the joy for your players while also making sure you know everybody's going to work. You got to work, right? You got to work hard. So how do you sort of toe that line between, you know, hey, we want to create joy so that when we win, we celebrate that we've earned it and it's going to be fun and we're going to have a fun time together, but also know that you're going to bust your tails. How do you create that balance?
Well, you know, I mean, for us, it's always about process. You know, I mean, I think a lot of times, you know, I mean, guys are outcome driven, like in this deal. And you know what? I mean, you got to stick to the process. I mean, where we are, where we've been, you know, I mean, where we're going. Okay. I mean, you just got to keep your head down. I put out a quote, you know, I mean, the other day, and it was a quote from Theodore Roosevelt, just talking about the man in the arena. And really, I mean, it's about the work that's got to get done. You know, I think a lot of times, I mean, you look up and you understand, you mean, what's around you. You know, people have expectations. You know, family members have expectations, but the only expectations that matter are the ones, you know, I mean, for the men in the arena. And right now, this thing is getting ready to go fast. This group is prepared, you know, I mean, to hit this next stretch of games. And I think for us, it's about going 1-0 every week. That's where our mindset's got to be. And we understand, you know, where we are health-wise. We understand where we are in the season. But we really got to go now.
Now, Coach, I mean, we've had you on week in and week out. And we've praised you when your team has done well. And your team has fought, even yeah. through the losses. But these last three losses that you've had, there was some undisciplined play, and you spoke of that as well. But what have you taken? What has been some positives in this, you know, this three-game losing streak for you guys? I know there can be many, but what are the positives that you can point to and say, okay, this is one thing we have done. We've done well as a team, and we need to continue to do it.
Well, man, I think the fabric of this team is built on the idea, man, that these guys are gonna play. Okay, I mean, they're gonna play, you know, snap the whistle, man, and they're gonna play to the end of the game. Now, we need to fix, you know, man, a lot of things, you know, man, for us to get to where we're trying to go. But this group, man, is always gonna stay in the fight, and I think, I mean, it has to start there. Now, you know, the focus and discipline piece has to come along, and I think what I saw last week in terms of we finally got some sacks. You know, I mean, against LSU. I mean, man, we scored on defense twice. I mean, there's a lot of little things happening. We got the run game going. Keyshawn, you know, like got off to a good start. I think, you know, I mean, the big three played solid. You know, the things that we need to start with in terms of, you know, line getting better, you know, up front offensively, defensively, okay, man, needing to apply more pressure, and really all of us all the way around needing to be more disciplined in terms of the penalties and not beating ourselves. I thought those things started the show, and now what we got to do is take all of that forward and make sure, man, that it takes us through the season. Because if we can do that, this team's going to play good ball.
Coach, I know you're a defensive guy. What do you want to see on that side of the ball this week, and what kind of challenges does Northern Illinois present you?
Well, they can run the football. But, yeah, you know, I mean, they're also going to look at what's on tape and say, you know what, man, we're going to take our shots. We're going to challenge these corners. Man, we're going to make sure, man, these safeties, you know, man, can make the one-on-one or find the angles. And that's what we're going to see. I mean, Ross is a good quarterback. I think they played a challenging schedule as well. But, you know, man, for us, I mean, I'm not really worried about really what they bring to the table. I got to be more concerned about how we react and how we play. We've gone through the scouting report. We understand what they do. But for us, man, we got to be on our details. You know, outside, you know, I mean, the coverage has got to be tight. Safety's got to be able to find angles. We can't let the ball fly over our head, and we got to stop the run.
Okay, Coach, did the missus give you a tidbit of, you know, information this week? You know, when we talked to you last, you said, listen, your team ain't playing well.
Yeah.
Did she say anything after last week or going into this week?
Yeah, man, she said, I'm glad we're through that stretch of, you know, the first three games. So, yeah, she gave me some kindly advice, and we moved on to Northern Illinois, so that's where we are.
I know Jared Pinckney's production has not been where you would like it. Obviously, that's a function of playing against some really high-level defenses and maybe not being 100%. How do you go about, like, you want to zero in on a guy and get him involved? I know you got Kalijah involved last week a little bit more. When you zero in on a guy and you want to get him involved, how do you do that without making it so obvious that the other team is just going to try to shut that down?
Well, man, he's going to get his touches. I mean, for us, we've got enough balance and enough players that can make plays outside and now getting healthy with the run game. We just got to make sure, as we're going through the floor of the offense, his number's going to get called. So, man, he'll get his, seven or eight opportunities, like in this ball game, to go do what he does, okay? The defense doesn't know when it's coming. So, for us, we just got to make sure, man, that it comes in a variety of packages, like some different looks, some different ways, and we'll do that. Jerry Godowski understands, where these guys are, what we need to do, and Pinckney's got to be a huge part of it because the middle of the field is wide open. We just got to take advantage of it.
Coach, always appreciate the time. Best of luck this week. Let's get in the win column, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it.
You got it, Derek Mason, head coach, Vanderbilt, anchor down indeed, as he joins us every Wednesday here on Morning Drive.
A man who knows his limitations.
Yeah.
He will not sing on the air.
Yeah, but if his team start winning, I guarantee we can get him to sing on air.
I bet you we could.
How about this? Vanderbilt is 6.5-point favorite this week.
What?
That's a small number.
Yeah, that's a very small number.
It should be a bigger number.
I mean, if you listen to them, Northern Illinois.
It's one of the better MAC programs
over the years. The better MAC programs. They've had 6 10-win seasons over the course of the last 10 years, I believe. That's what he said. So this is a good MAC program. And if you walk in like UT did the first game of the season, you will end up with the results that UT had, and that's a loss to a MAC team.
And Northern Illinois won't be scared. They've played at Utah and at Nebraska the last 2 weeks. Now, they've given up a lot of points in both those games, but don't tell me it doesn't – when you go against Utah's defensive line and then Nebraska's offense, you've gone against two of the better units in the country at their position. You can – they're going to walk in and they're going to play Vanderbilt and they're going to realize that it's not as tough as playing Nebraska's offense or not as tough as playing Utah's defense. They'll feel that right away on the first couple of series.
The D-Mace All-22 breakdown is coming up at the top of the hour, but we'll wrap up the first half of the show when we come back with some college football discussion and really a simple question, and it's kind of surprising that we'll have this discussion, but it's valid. Who's the best team in college football? We're back after this. Welcome back into Morning Drive, 7:47 live here on a Wednesday. Nick Braden, D-Mace Marquise. Little Ashanti, I believe.
Nah,
that's Biggie.
I was going to say, that's way older than that. Come on now.
This is also
Pop-up. Saw the honeys, dummies, Playboy's bunnies, those wanting money.
Why are you holding your head?
That's how you're supposed to do it, man.
I thought you had to hold one.
You had to hold your headphones,
You had to hold the one and then get the left hand going.
Yeah, that's when you hit the high note. When you hit the high note, that's when you grab the right ear and then you just start singing.
D-Mace is in the studio laying down a track.
Exactly, man. Yeah. That's how you do it, man. Can't nobody bother me.
You were talking about how you look when you're recording stuff, and you were talking about documentaries during the break. I can't remember what the damn show is called, but the one on HBO that has that's about Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine, who's his counterpart from the East Coast, who's responsible for Bruce Springsteen and all this stuff. It's a fascinating 4-part series on HBO if you haven't seen it, and it takes you all the way back to NWA and Ice Cube and how they were in there's footage of them in the studio recording and stuff back in the day. It's really interesting. You got to watch it. I don't know why I thought about that.
Did they hold both of their headphones?
No, just the one. Easy didn't hold anything. Easy was just in there going, just flailing. I don't think he had headphones on, actually. But so, y'all know Easy.
latest top 25 poll, Clemson 1, Alabama 2, Georgia 3, LSU 4. All four teams 4-0. Georgia's got a really impressive win against Notre Dame. LSU's got a really impressive win at Texas. Bama and Clemson largely untested. Can you make the case right now that if somebody walked in here today and tried to make a case for all four of these teams as the best in the country, that there's a valid argument?
I would add two more to it.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. See, I would cut it at four.
Oklahoma and Ohio State. Ohio State has been absolutely dominant.
Yeah.
Pure domination. They have not been challenged on offense. They have not been challenged on defense. Now, their schedule is going to get tougher starting this weekend. They'll play at Nebraska, and we'll find out a little bit more about their defense. I don't think Nebraska can stop Justin Fields. So the question is, can they score? Can Nebraska score? And their defense was a problem last year, Ohio State. So that's a big question. LSU still has given up a lot of points. They give up 38 to Vanderbilt. They give up 38 to Texas. They're giving up a lot of yards. Clemson hasn't been as crisp on offense at quarterback, but again, it's hard to argue with Clemson right now. Bama's given up chunk plays on defense. and not able to run the football as much as they've been able to run the football in the past. Georgia sort of played it really conservatively against Notre Dame and kind of Alabama'd their way into a win. You know, you can look around all these teams. I think those Oklahoma hasn't played anybody either, but they're just their offense is executing at an unbelievable clip. You can make a case for all six of these teams, and I honestly don't know who's better.
You know what? Who might be at this point of time right now? Who might be the best team in the country?
You're going to say Auburn, aren't you?
Wisconsin.
Okay.
No. Wisconsin might be the best team in the country.
Statistically,
based on what they've done, they destroyed Michigan, and I know USF and Central Michigan, I know those teams are terrible, but neither one of those teams were able to score. Michigan was only able to score 14 points. They dominated in the run game. Their defense is probably one of the best in the country. They had a bunch of guys back that were injured last year that are guys that have put in time. This is a team that plays a lot of man-to-man coverage. They're able to do that, so they're able to put more guys on the line of scrimmage to stop the run. At this point in time, and people look at it because it's Wisconsin and they still see Ohio State. Ohio State might be the better team when you're talking about personnel.
Yeah, I don't see it.
But I think if you look at what's been done, Wisconsin – After three games, and I'm not saying if they play Bama they would win or if they play Clemson they would win.
They wouldn't.
Based upon what has happened, they might be, at this point in time, they might be the best team in the country.
I don't care if you've played Slappy State and Mother Mary and Sisters of the Poor. Like, if you go 110-0, it's hard to do better than that.
Yeah, no, you're right.
They won their first two games 110-0.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be better than that. And then, of course, the next game, they pummel Michigan. Now, none of those three teams threatened them with the pass at all.
Exactly.
There was no threat of the pass down the field. So your point, from a statistical standpoint, you could argue Wisconsin has played the best football of any team in America through 3 weeks. Because, again, we just pointed out some of the issues with the big teams, right? Like, now, we're nitpicking Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, LSU.
But how much of the LSU defense with surrendering points is a product of them just scoring so much offensively?
Well, and two of those for Vanderbilt were defensive touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So those kind of don't count. Sam Ellinger is phenomenal. He'd score on almost anybody, so I don't really hold that against them. But again, I don't really hold the defense or the running game against Bama. We're just nitpicking six great teams. We're looking at these teams going, what's the difference? And right now, if you told me you had to win a game right now, you know, hey, you can pick any team in America, and you got to bet your kids' future education on it. What do you bet? I'm still probably taking Alabama. I'd still probably say, you know what? You can pick anybody in America. Give me Alabama. Let's go to battle. I'll still probably take the Tide, but you know, Oklahoma, Ohio State,
but why are you
LSU,
saying the Tide over Clemson right now?
I just some of that's the matchup between the two. Some of it's the motivation from being beaten last year.
Are you down a little bit on Trevor Lawrence?
No, I mean I think he's. You know, I think he's forced it a little bit through the first 4 weeks, and that's led to a couple of interceptions. I just think matchup wise, if you put Bama and Clemson on a field today, neutral field, and said go to battle, Tua and the Alabama Crimson Tide would have that extra motivational edge of getting beaten in the championship game last year. It's 6-1, half a dozen the other. You can't lose either way, really. But if I had to put my mortgage down on something, I would still. The most trustworthy, safest pick is still Bama.
I said after 3 weeks, Wisconsin is the best team in the country. I believe. Now, do I think if they had to play Alabama this week or Clemson this week, do I think they would win? Probably not. I think they probably would beat Georgia.
You think they'd beat Georgia?
I think they would beat Georgia.
Wisconsin has never won a game like that in its entire life.
But I think the way they run the football and the way they play defense, I think they would be. It would be a close game. It wouldn't be a blowout, but it would be a close game. On a neutral field, I think Wisconsin would beat Georgia. Here's the thing.
Keep an eye on, by the way, Jim Leonard, defensive coordinator for the Badgers, former great safety.
I played with Jim in Baltimore.
He is very, very young and very, very
good. Jim is a smart guy. Jim's a smart guy.
Rising star as far as the coaching ranks go, defensive coordinator for Wisconsin.
But here's the thing. You say Bama. I think Clemson will beat Bama by more than 10 points.
I mean, that's possible.
Bama has no answer for those two receivers on the outside. Both of them are over 6'3", and Trevor Lawrence being 6'6", and Etienne in the backfield. I'm telling you right now, if they were to play Alabama on a neutral field right now, they would beat Alabama.
I'll give you something
points.
That'll appease you right now.
And
if Alabama at LSU,
I love Bama.
If Bama LSU played on a neutral field, I think LSU's got a legit chance. Now, I don't think they're going to beat them because it's in Tuscaloosa this year.
Here's what's to your
neutral
to,
field. Yeah, I think they could beat them.
To both your point, I think anybody can. Any of these six teams can beat each other. I would agree. But to both of your points, the things you just said, right? Like those LSU receivers and that Joe Burrow offense, and it's going to be hard to stop that. You know, Trevor Lawrence and those big receivers and T. Higgins and Amari Rodgers and Justin Ross. Okay, that's good. That's true. Both of you are 100% correct. I'll still take the law firm of Ruggs, Waddle, Smith, and Judy and say, try and stop me, boys. Because Tua with those four dudes,
oh yeah,
just as good as
I'm betting
Trevor,
the over.
Trevor Lawrence with those guys. The difference is Trevor Lawrence's guys are a little bit bigger. They're more the 6'4 guys. But I think Jerry Judy is uncoverable. I don't think there's a player in college football, or even two maybe, that can stop Jerry Judy right now. So.
But you know what Bama's offense has become? And I guess I'm nitpicking, but the running game is just so... It might be the worst running game of the Saban era.
It might be, and that may be where Clemson is the pick, because ETN and that Clemson running game is in pretty good shape. But Trevor hasn't been as sharp as Tua.
Marquise, you can attest to this because you watch them play against Southern Miss, even though I refuse to watch that beatdown. All Alabama does is RPO slants with Tua to Ruggs, Judy, and Waddle, and they turn an 8-yard slant into a 70-yard touchdown. That's their whole offense right now.
Henry Ruggs is like the fastest guy on the field. It's kind of hard to defend that.
It's like the Niners West Coast offense when it first came around. They just ran slants to Jerry Rice and John Taylor and Roger Craig, and you couldn't stop it.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't stop it, I'm going to continue to run it.
But against better competition, the LSUs, the Georgias, the Clemsons.
It becomes a little bit different. And I say Clemson win because Clemson now walks in with no fear of Alabama.
No.
The coaching staff walks in with no fear
Nor should
of
they.
Nick Saban
Not for
and
years.
His coaching staff.
Not for years.
They walk in saying, you know what? Our athletes are better than your athletes. Our coaches are better than your coaches. Damn it, our quarterback is much better than your quarterback. Try to beat us. There's something about Clemson.
I wouldn't put it past Saban, though.
There's something about Clemson. And I love Alabama, but Alabama... They don't look like the same, even though they're winning. I don't look at Alabama. Say if they had to play an LSU or Clemson or Georgia.
Good news is we'll find out all of those games.
I don't look at Alabama and say from a defensive standpoint, they're going to shut you down.
Yeah, I agree. It's
basically just shut you down. And it's in years prior, it's been that way where I just feel that, you know what, Alabama's defense is going to shut you down, and then Tua, whoever's going to throw for a billion yards, and going to throw to whoever, Jerry Judy, Calvin Ridley, it don't matter. But I just don't feel that way about them this year. I don't feel that way about Clemson either as far as their defense.
Or
their
LSU.
Because their defense hadn't, and they lost a lot of guys on defense, and granted, I understand that.
All four defensive linemen gone, which is a big reason they beat Alabama, was those four defensive linemen.
And that's one reason why I like Wisconsin so much. I like Wisconsin so much so that I think they will end up winning the Big Ten because of their defense. Now, they got to stay healthy. If they stay healthy, then I don't think there's even Ohio State. It wouldn't be a blowout. It would be a close game. I think in a Big Ten championship game, they beat Ohio State because of their defense.
I have watched Wisconsin football.
I know you have
my entire life, and they have never once gotten into a game like that a national championship caliber situation and won a game. It's never happened.
No, you're right.
They've lost every single one of them because they don't have the athletes when they have to go up
against
an athlete.
They won the Big Ten championship with.
They won it as an 8-5 team one time.
With what you call it, Wilson at quarterback, right?
They did. They lost two games that year. Mm-hmm. Both of them. On freaking Hail Marys.
Well, they won it with Ron Dane as well, didn't they?
They've won a bunch of Big Ten titles.
Yeah, they won them, but I'm saying in recent years.
But there's never been the national championship situation. They've always choked a game away before they get into the national championship situation. And the only other time they've been in the national championship situation was when they had Russell Wilson, and they lost two games that year to Michigan State and Ohio State on Hail Marys. And then a couple years ago when JT Barrett was in the Big Ten title game, they had no chance. JT Barrett missed three open touchdowns, and they still won the game relatively easily. And that's the Ohio State team that won the Big Ten title that year. So they just have never won that game, and I don't have faith in them doing that again. My grandfather might die in hospice right now with me hearing me say that, but it is what it is.
1 hour from now, a big Predators announcement. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. That's coming up at 9:00. But on the other side, it's time for another installment of the Derek Mason dissection, the D-Mace. All 22 breakdown. What really stood out to number 85? He's got a handful of plays that we'll delve into next on Morning Drive.